Have you tried changing your health year on year, resolving that this year things are going to be different, but nothing seems to change? Oftentimes, when things are not changing, we are following many wellness myths and not looking at the full picture, including our nutrition, recovery, stress management, leaving out mind-body connection. I want to introduce you to Wellness Redefined, a new podcast from Rufilion Media that's here to dispel all your myths about wellness and fitness while sharing stories of how we've redefined what it means to be healthy. On each episode, we'll be talking to experts from all walks of life who will share their own unique wellness journey and offer their perspective. I am your host, Tamika Rochester, founder and CEO of Harlem Cycle, a premier wellness space in New York City with a focus on indoor cycling. I've been an advocate for wellness since as early as I can remember. So if this sounds like something that could help change your life, go ahead and pause the show you're listening to and subscribe to Wellness Redefined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to American Muslim Project. I'm Asad Butt. American Muslim Project is a podcast where we share the contributions Muslims are making to American life. In each episode, we elevate unique Muslim voices that are shaping this American experience. My guest today is Omar El-Sayed. Omar is the program manager of the Islamic Scholarship Fund. ISF, as it's known, is a nonprofit that seeks to increase American Muslim representation in film, media, law, and government. Since 2009, ISF has awarded $1.5 million to more than 450 American Muslims who are pursuing degrees or careers in human rights, journalism, government, criminal justice, religion, and more. The money is awarded through merit-based scholarships, film grants, congressional internships, and congressional scholarships. Omar joined ISF last September to help the nonprofit expand its programming and create new systems of support for their alumni, which they call scholars. Omar, welcome to American Muslim Project. Can you tell me a little bit more about the Islamic Scholarship Fund?
Sure. So we shorten it to ISF, just easier. ISF's mission is to increase American Muslim representation in media, policy, and film. And so those three categories, we break them down into like four verticals. So we have public interest law, public policies like getting involved on Capitol Hill, for example. Film is obviously like, you know, you could say Hollywood or just getting involved in filmmaking in general or specifically screenwriting, because that's actually writing Muslim stories. And then lastly, like journalism or anything involved, you know, anyone involved in the media. So we started about 11 or 12 years ago and started off with just a scholarship, right, to support students actually getting involved in those fields. But lately, I would say it's just grown to be so much more. We've moved the flagpole or like the end goal of what it means to actually have impact to whether or not people that are studying in these fields actually end up in an impactful career in those fields. So we do whatever we can, mentorship, education, resources, networking, all to support our scholars so that they can actually find themselves in an engaging career. And then it kind of becomes a network where our more accomplished scholars, let's say, they can give back and support those that are in need of support. So it's like a really, it's a tight-knit community of change makers across the country.
No, that's really interesting. I want to kind of dig a little bit deeper on each individual field. So I guess maybe combining film, media, journalism. Why did you guys decide to focus on film, media, journalism?
The reason for the mission is to combat, I should say, like Islamophobia, promote equality. So that's the reason for the mission. And the reason why those fields were chosen is because those are the fields that we have found to have the biggest impact on public opinion. So literally public opinion and policy are the kind of the two sections. I would say those fields that you mentioned, media, film, journalism, etc. Obviously, those are the fields that like, okay, this is how information is being presented to the public, right? So anytime there is a, let's say, I know this is world news, but the most recent occasion I could think of is like whatever was going on in Paris a little while ago, let's say. And there's always like that Islamophobia. Well, the reason why it's there is because of the media portrayal of what's happening. So anytime somebody does something crazy, we as Muslims were quite familiar with the phenomenon. It's almost like we always feel on the defense, even though we didn't do anything, right? It's sure. Just one person did something. Of course. So as an example, we want to make sure that we have more, people on the right track writing stories about us. And when a decision is being made in the newsroom, okay, how are we going to spin this story, there's at least one Muslim available to say. So they could say, oh, you know, Omar, what do you think? What do you think about this? What should we say about this? So getting the right people into the right rooms, or I guess you could say getting a seat at the table, as they say, it's just so important.
Yeah. It reminds me of when I first started my career. My early part of my career was in broadcast journalism and video production. And I actually interned at an NPR station in Boston right after the 9/11 attacks happened. And I remember someone running into the newsroom and saying, how do you pronounce this word? This city in Pakistan called Peshawar? And I'm like, no, Peshawar. And he looks at me and he goes, how do you know that? And I'm like, I said, my family's from there, you know? And so, you know, to me, that's the, you know, the epitome of, you know, you need people in the room, because even just for the little things of pronunciation, you know?
Right. It's like, I feel like there's a dark humor when it comes to like stories like that. Like, it's funny, but there's pain behind it, right?
Sure, yeah. And that's just a simple example. I mean, there's all sorts of other, you know, types. We all kind of have examples like that, especially people who are in journalism and whatnot. Are there examples that come to your mind in recent examples, either positive or negative portrayals of Muslims in the media?
I think the Pfizer vaccine, for example, was like a really positive example, that being, you know, made by a Muslim couple. I saw that story shared a lot. But again, I think most of the people that share that story are Muslims.
Yeah.
So unfortunate. It's just, again, I think the work needs to be done, because unless the story matches up with the popular narrative or what people believe will sell, unfortunately, it doesn't get shared as much or doesn't get as much attention. So, but that's the most recent example off the top of my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then I guess the policy fields are law and public policy and related fields, and we can assume why that's important, but I'd just love to hear why you think it's important.
Yeah, I think, well, policy is kind of a broad term, right? Like when you talk about writing policy, we always get questions from students, well, what exactly does that mean? So for us, what we mean by that, I think that the epitome of that is literally like Congress. So when we talk about policy or legislation being passed, we'd like Muslims to be a part of that process. So getting more Muslims on Capitol Hill is definitely like a chief objective of our organization. As far as law, same thing. I think, you know, we understand that the system of law that we have sometimes is not just, and we want to make sure we fill as many seats as possible with people that have, let's say, the Muslim communities. I hate to say it, but I'll say it, having the Muslim communities interests at heart, but also just having justice at heart. So I think past couple of years, we've kind of seen the problems with the criminal justice system more than ever. If we had more Muslims at the table, they'd be able to contribute to dealing with that kind of racism, systemic racism. And I think we're seeing it against all communities of colors, not just Muslims now. So it's interesting to see, like growing up, we saw at least my perspective growing up was you would see, yes, it's true of other communities, but especially Muslims because of this post 9/11 world. But now unfortunately, you see that there's hate against all non-white communities, it feels like. So it's a little bit painful to talk about, but that's, I think, what's why I'm happy to be working for ISF, is because you're kind of working for something that's going beyond just even advocating for change, but like actually physically making a change by supporting people in a systemic institutional way of getting people to the right place so that they can implement that change, rather than just like, I think a lot of people when they have these conversations, it's kind of a venting session. People say, oh, we need to do this, we need to do that, this is the problem with it, you know, and that's, we hear that every day, every week. But it's great to have it's good that it's good that ISF is here, or it's good that you know, and other orgs as well. But it's good that ISF is here to be doing that work, because we're taking steps in the right direction towards making that change and actually seeing like a brighter tomorrow.
Can you give me some examples of any of your scholarship recipients that have, you know, you've been around for now almost a dozen years? Any success stories that you can share?
Too many. And I feel bad like having to just mention one or two, because I don't want to take away from anyone. In the journalism field, I see a lot of articles written by, her name is Ada Al-Assar, I think, hope I'm pronouncing that right. But she literally is writing articles for CNN, and she's still in school. So,
oh, in school still?
Yes. So I think she's still in her graduate school, but that talk about being a young achiever, right? Like you're literally writing for CNN and still in school. In the law field, a big name is Omar Sheker. If you know him, he works for Human Rights Watch for specificities on the Israel-Palestine, I don't want to say conflict, you know, there's a lot of politics there, right? But that's his realm. And so he was a law recipient and, you know, he's dealing with that talk about dealing with human rights, right?
Yeah.
Sure. For policy, I'll say that our most recent congressional fellow, again, Mustafa Alemi, so he's working in the office of Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. So we're expecting big things from him moving forward. Film. So many films made. I believe one of our filmmakers was actually on.
Yeah,
on
Razi Jaffrey was on earlier. Exactly. Yeah, I didn't make the connection until someone on your team shared that with us. But yeah, Razi Jaffrey was on our third or fourth episode earlier this year.
Yeah, one of many amazing films. Other filmmakers, just because I love movies. The Honest Struggle, Justin Massouf, that was a big one. One of the early film grant recipients.
Tell me about that. I don't know it.
So The Honest Struggle is about, once you get out of prison, how difficult it is for people who have spent so much time behind bars to adjust or reacclimate to life outside or, you know, here. Yeah, great film. I'd recommend it. You know, for the filmmaking process, I'll say that it's hard to get started. But once things start rolling, then you say, okay, this much of the movie is shot. It's easy to get funding in other places. So ISF is kind of like the spark. So if somebody has a good idea, we see that they have the skills, we award them the grant, they're able to get their film made. So,
yeah, that's great. There is a deadline coming up. Do you want to talk about what's coming up and what that which program that is for?
Yeah, I'd love to. So the flagship program of ISF was the scholarship. That's a year. It's an annual program with the deadline normally being March 21st. So that's 2021, right? But we've just extended the deadline to April 5th. So for if you're a Muslim student and you're working in the fields of media, policy, or film, and policy, of course, includes political science, public administration, international studies. So it's not just public policy, right? When I talk about these fields, you know, law is also included, as we mentioned. Feel free to visit, you know, our website. I'll just say now programs.islamicscholarshipfund.org is the best website to go to just get the most relevant information about the scholarship. But we also, if you have questions about the application, just feel free to email us. We're pretty good about getting, you know, responses back. I know it's kind of like we have a very clear focus. I think you've noticed, right?
Yeah, sure.
So
yeah.
Not every student is going to be eligible, but if you have questions about that eligibility, you have questions about that application, feel free to reach out to us. We're always happy to engage students and answer their questions.
I want to talk a little bit about you. Why did you decide to join this organization in September? What is your role?
So yeah, I'm the program manager. So facilitating all of these different programs from the top down for the A to Z is kind of my responsibility. It's a joy because I think it's just there's a lot of moving parts and it takes a lot of follow-up and making sure that everything gets done and everything is moving forward on time. And why I personally love ISF and why I was happy to come on board is because I feel like in the Muslim community, you know, there's a lot of complaining and very little doing, you know, and I grew up with this, like sitting around, we'd have the house parties with the family and then the men would go and have tea and maybe some of them would smoke and all they would do is complain.
Yeah.
And growing up, I think you learn from that a little bit, right? Like in my personal experience, you learn from that. It's like, okay, this is how you deal with your problems. You get the boys around and you complain about it. Sorry to put it that way, but that's literally what would happen, at least in my upbringing. But I always thought, why not do something about it? Why not put your actions or, you know, force yourself to commit to something? So I think nowadays people are looking, okay, let's not just complain. Let's actually do something. That's why I keep using the word institutionalizing it.
Yeah.
Because you want it to, when you institutionalize something, you're making it exist beyond yourself. I think these days, unfortunately, everything is obsessed with the personal brand. Everything is obsessed with me. This is what I'm doing. I am an influencer. I am doing this. I'm advocating for that. I'm not a fan of that. I think we need more people willing to put their cause above their name and sacrifice their name for the cause. It's not, I think we as a collective suffer because we put me before the group. If we put the American Muslim cause, let's say, above me, I think we're going to get a lot further. So when we're talking about supporting organizations like ISF, or not just ISF, there's so many organizations doing good work. I think that's really why it's important. Some people think, well, I don't want to support this cause because I'd rather just do it myself. Well, you're not just supporting what's going to happen when you're gone, right? Like, we're not right. just supporting that one activity or supporting like the growth of an organization to continuously learn, grow, and facilitate that impact.
One question that came to mind was, I feel like another common complaint is that people want change now, right? And are not willing to put in the work and the time that it needs to, you know, it might take a generation for us to get to where we need to be, you know? And so how do you deal with that? And what's your thought around that?
Sure. Just as you said, we're definitely in this time of desiring or demanding instant gratification. And unfortunately, that's just not how some things work in this world. And, you know, I myself am guilty of this, but sometimes when you don't see a change made immediately, you give up on that cause and you move on and you try something else. But, you know, what's that proverb? The best day to plant the tree was last year. The second best day is today, right? So yeah. Of always hindsight is 2020, and you think, oh man, I should have bought Bitcoin or whatever, you know, whatever it is, yeah. Silly thing, whatever. GameStop, I'm sorry. Yeah. Not, yeah, yeah, exactly. GameStop thing here. Speaking of, no, I'm just kidding. what's the stock at now?
Yeah, right.
No, I will say that really, yeah, we got to be focused on just playing the long game and being patient. And the reason, you know, oh man, I'm getting to like uncle mentality, right? Like,
I'm assuming, right? You look pretty young. You're not an uncle at this point, I'm guessing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm 31. As of this recording, I'm 31 years old, which I'm like shocked that I feel like I'm, you know, I don't want to say an early midlife crisis, but yeah, I'm like, I can't believe that I'm 31. Anyways, I understand where the uncle, I don't want to call them out. Like, I feel like it's kind of rude to say uncle, but the uncle mentality, the reason why uncles are successful in like running organizations and like community initiatives is because they're patient and they stick around and they do it. They're in it for the long haul. Some of the best leaders that I've ever met in my life are like that. They may have some flaws, but what makes them exceptional is that they're patient and they don't give up. And I think a lot of us, we don't have that. We give up very easily. And as soon as we see that things don't work out, we move on and we think that we failed. So yeah, stay patient. I feel like if so many people, if they would have kept going instead of moving on and calling it quits and declaring failure, who knows where they could have been at right now.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Omer will share a personal story of getting bullied in middle school. You're listening to American Muslim Project. Welcome back to American Muslim Project. My guest today is Omer El Sayed, the program manager at the Islamic Scholarship Fund. After graduating college, Omer spent time working in the healthcare industry, but left it to pursue his passion of working exclusively with Muslim organizations. He told me why.
Many Muslims, I don't know if others have found themselves in my experience, but many Muslims are trauma survivors one way or another. And I think the trauma of having to go through, live through 9/11, let's say, and go to school and be made fun of as the one Muslim school or the one Muslim kid at school, that was traumatic. And I think those kind of experiences shape what kind of person you want to be for some people. And I think that definitely happened to me. And so those experiences shifted me like, okay, this wasn't right. I'd like to do something about it. And so I was always gravitated towards that cause, I would say. So I'm actually so blessed to have found ISF and to be working here.
Well, can I ask, what kind of things would people say to you?
Okay, so interesting. How specific can I get here?
This is
do I want to should I mention names or
if you want to, that's totally fine. No, I mean I think that
I feel like those little details can add a little flavor to the story. So sure. I remember Stephen Tennant, if you're out there, it's okay, I love you and I forgive you, but I remember sitting around in junior high, I was in seventh grade when 9/11 happened, and a few months later I was sitting outside with some people having lunch, you know, friends, but not really quite friends. You know what I mean? Like when you're just having lunch, you don't really know them that well. So not necessarily anyone I would know to have my back, let's say. And I was just eating, minding my own business when all of a sudden, 6'4", 12-year-old Steven walks up to me and says, "You're a terrorist," in front of everyone. And I was like, "What?" He said, "You're a terrorist." I said, "Why? Why would you say that? How can you think that? Like what, like, but at the same time, you're embarrassed, you're shocked, right? Like you're being put on the spot in front of all these people." Steven said, "You know how to defuse a bomb." And I said, "Wait a second, like, wouldn't that make me a counter-terrorist?"
Using logic. I love it.
On your bullies. I was so shocked. Why would he say defuse a bomb? Doesn't he mean like make a bomb? But anyways, the reason why I knew the word counter-terrorist, by the way, is because at that time I was a gamer. I mean, I'm still a gamer, but I was playing the game Counter-Strike. So, you know, terrorist, counter-terrorist, for anyone that reference, sure. But anyways, so gaming did help me in that moment, let's say. So then afterwards, somebody finally, I remember this girl, her name was Ashley. Thank you, Ashley, for standing up for me. She said, "What are you talking about? Like, go away." Not friends with her, but she stood up for me.
That's great.
Still, it was great, but at the same time, it took a little while, right? Like, it was like a 3-minute thing where he was just like not going away. Like, he found me. I don't know why he did that. I found out a few years later, his dad was a high school teacher at the high school I went to. And I knew a few Muslims that went to the same high school as me. He would spend maybe 5 minutes of every day complaining about Muslims and specifically Arab people. Guess what? He was a computer science teacher. Like, he would teach people how to type. So what business does he have in a high school telling kids about Middle Eastern politics, right? Yeah. So I luckily did not have a class with this guy. Steven, again, I love you. I forgive you if you hear this. But I think the reason why he said that is probably from his dad, you know? So again, it's kind of, this behavior is kind of learned, right? So that was kind of like a lesson for me from a young age. Like, don't take it personally against the people, but that's why we got to systematically deal with these things. It's not enough to just, it's like a problem greater than every individual.
As you were sharing your story, you started by saying, "I love you, I forgive you," which I thought was really interesting because this is a traumatic thing for you to have gone through, whatever it was 20 years ago or so. Why did you start with that? Is that something that you do often?
Yeah, not as much as I used to. But I used to have problems sleeping, you know, like every other awkward teenager. I would think about every cringy moment that I ever did in my life. Have you experienced that as well?
Oh, yeah. I still have 41.
Still, and okay. Yeah. Okay. So what I found helped me sleep at night is forgiving myself, forgiving others as well. So, and then actually I found out later in life that that's actually like a... I don't know if we can how religious we can get here. May I?
Yeah, for sure, please.
So I think there is a story of the Prophet, peace be upon him, in which he was sitting in a gathering in the mosque or the masjid, and somebody walked in and he told everyone that he was sitting with that's somebody who has been promised paradise, and people were very interested in getting to paradise back then, is what I'm told. So they made a big effort to ask this guy, okay, what are you doing? He's got the secret sauce. Let's figure it out. So, but at the same time, they were kind of shy to tell him what they were getting out of him. So one person even took it so far as to make up some excuse so that he can live with him and watch him. So he does that and he watches the guy. Nothing's out of the ordinary. He's like, man, this guy is nothing special. So he comes out and he asks him, he said, okay, listen, like, you know, Prophet, peace be upon him, said that you're going to paradise, and I want to go to paradise, so tell me, what are you doing? He said, man, I'm not doing anything special, but the one thing that might be special is that every night before I sleep, I forgive everyone that has wronged me that day.
Wow.
that stuck with me because I think, again, this is kind of getting really, like, we're getting into a lot of morality now, but I feel like, yes, what's cool about Islam is that, like, unlike other, I don't want to say unlike other faiths, but, like, it takes, when you wrong somebody, it's a serious deal, right? Like, you, it's not just like you can just ask for forgiveness and the damage has been done. No, when you hurt somebody, you hurt them. And it's between you and that person at that point. Like, you can ask for God's forgiveness, but also you should seek forgiveness from that person. I just feel like there's too much pain in this world. And I think a lot of times it's not on purpose, or even those people that do bad things. What I always question, what brought them to that? So even though I may have, I try not to have hatred, but I try to forgive. So Stephen, I don't know. I said, I love you. I forgive you. I don't actually love the guy, but I do forgive him. Sure. Because especially because I learned about his dad. In fact, maybe I say I love him because I feel bad. I feel bad that he was taught something that was not correct. And he was maybe raised in a way that taught him to hate. And we've all, maybe some of us have been taught bad things from our parents without even our parents. Again, they don't even know, right? Yeah, the parents don't even know that's wrong. And like, you know, we question, like, why, how did Trump come to power? How are these people supporting somebody like this? That's a question I think about every day. And so I think part of the solution is not to hate those people, but to try and understand. Like, I hate what they do. I hate what they believe trust me, a lot of passion. But I don't try to hate the individual. I try to think about, okay, what caused them to think this way? What made them ignorant? What made them, you know, I do think of the prophet, peace be upon him, when he was stoned and people threw stones at him. Not stone 420 stone. I meant like the archaic stone meaning. Right. Yes. Archangel Gabriel asked him, oh, would you like me to crush these people between these two mountains? And he said, no, please spare them. Because I'm afraid that their children will find guidance. So why punish these people for, interesting story, but I think just the general cause is like, okay, you always want to give somebody a second chance for guidance. And you want to try and I'll say that's something, stories like Good and Evil, and like movies, that's why I love movies. I love stories of good and evil. These are, I think, all these things that shape me, or like I felt like I love, is because of those traumatic experiences. Like I felt like I hated the injustice that people did to me, like the bullying that I would receive. And I aspired to be a hero. Like I played games. I used to love games where you're the hero and like you're bringing justice to the world and like those kind of things. Those were like fantasies for me because I felt like I didn't have justice in my life, right? And I know I'm not the only one. So, that's my story. I think that's why I got involved in nonprofits. So it's not quite, I'm not quite saving the world. It's not like Star Wars, you know, with the Death Star and all that. But it's bring balance to the Force, if whatever nerdy reference you want to come up with. Yeah. But it's definitely helped me sleep better knowing that I feel like I'm at least doing my part.
I hear that. I want to thank you for joining the podcast. This has been a fascinating conversation, and I look forward to having you on the program in the future.
Thanks. Thank you so much. No, it was a pleasure speaking with you as well. Thank you.
My conversation with Umar El Sayed was recorded in March of 2021. You can find out more about ISF at its website, IslamicScholarshipFund.org. A reminder, the next application deadline for their upcoming scholarship program is April 5th. We'll have links in the show notes to that, along with everything else that we talked about. Thanks for listening. American Muslim Project is a production of Rafaelion Media. This episode was produced and edited by Lindsay Gamble, Mark Donato, and me, Assad Butt. Simon Hutchinson did our theme music. Special thanks to Liz Getman from ISF for connecting with us. She did it through our website, and you can too at AmericanMuslimProject.com.